Hello, and welcome back to Moving Right Along, a Muppet Movie Podcast brought to you by ToughPigs.com. This is the podcast where we watch Muppet Treasure Island 2 minutes at a time and talk about it a lot. I'm your host, Ryan Rowe.
I'm your other host, Anthony Strand.
And today we have a frequent guest back with us. She joined us pretty recently for a bonus episode about Muppet Classic Theater. She's back with us again. Guest, who are you?
Ahoy there, mateys! I'm Roz Strand! I'm Roz so Strand. Happy to be here!
Oh, well, we're so happy to have you. Thanks for being here.
Another winner, guys! This is going to be great! Everybody loves this movie, and there's absolutely no conflict about it at all, right?
Pretty much everybody loves this movie.
Let the record show that Roz is staring at me with a like a fake smile plastered to her face.
Everybody and loves it, right?
Have any problems tonight at
no,
all?
No. Is that so? Should we get into it right up front that you accidentally requested a scene you don't even like that much?
Okay, this is not my fault.
Well, you specifically requested a particular line, which we will get to.
Yes.
And it just happened to be in a 2 minute part of this movie with other stuff that apparently is not your favorite.
No, because I forgot that these other minutes existed with it. I don't do the planning of the minutes. I like this joke and I thought that it was attached to several other jokes.
Right.
In quick succession. And instead, it is like the first and only joke
your mistake was in thinking that scenes in the movie Muppet Treasure Island have more than one good joke in them.
That is that so was, false.
That was your mistake.
No.
Well, today we're talking about minutes 13 and 14 of Muppet Treasure Island, in which Blind Pew gives Billy Bones the black spot, and Billy Bones hastily packs up his sea chest. So, at the beginning of this clip, Blind Pew is right up in Billy Bones' face. He says Bones thought he could get away with taking the treasure for himself and leave your shipmates with nothing. This is as good a time as any to bring this up. This is the first episode we're recording after our first two episodes of the season have aired. And in those two episodes, we speculated about how, based on the opening sequence, how Captain Flint was going to get back home or to wherever he was going after he buried the treasure, because he killed all the men who came ashore with him with the treasure. And I think we also were kind of speculating about how Billy Bones even knew about this thing that Captain Flint did burying the treasure, because he's not in that opening sequence. But, as a few smart listeners pointed out to us, Captain Flint didn't bring his entire crew ashore. He just brought the exact number of men that he needed to bring the treasure.
15 men went ashore that day.
Yeah.
And only Captain Flint himself came back. Billy Bones was watching this. He was possibly in charge on the ship,
right,
keeping everybody. And then Captain Flint, like, he probably just saw him with the map.
Right.
And stole it on his deathbed.
Yeah, so you knew that. So you could have told us that. He goes back to the ship. He goes back to the ship. There's a whole ship full of the crew members whom he has not murdered, or not yet. So
yeah, it's a big ship. You need more than 15 people.
Yeah.
I assume.
So yes, we should have figured that out, but thanks to the smart listeners who pointed that out to us. But back in this scene, Bones looks extremely uncomfortable to have Blind Pew all up in his business. Then Pew says, "We are not pleased with that, Bill. Not at all. We want you to have this." And he slaps this piece of paper in Billy Bones' hand. And then he whirls around cackling, and Jerry Nelson does a great evil laugh.
So most of my life, I totally thought this guy's name was Blind Pierre.
I think other people have said that. It's because of the French accent.
It's the French accent. Blind Pierre. It sounds like Pierre.
It absolutely could be. Yeah.
And whenever, I think it was Anthony told me.
Well, yep, I definitely did.
That it was Blind Pew. I was just like, well, that's not true. That would be dumb.
Right.
Why would you call him that?
I mean, that's his name in the book.
Yeah, but that would be way more funny if his name was Blind Yeah, and he said it so ridiculously, and the actual character's name is Blind Pew in the book. I think that that would have been funny. So I'm going to call him Blind Pierre.
You can call him that. I always call him Blind Pierre. The way he says it kind of sounds like something smells bad, like pew.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I haven't thought of this before. Is Pew his first name or his last name? Any theories?
If it's Pierre, then this question is so easy. That's his first
name.
But Blind Pew, I have no idea.
Huh. But do you know who his favorite cast member is in Greta Gerwig's Little Women?
Go ahead.
Florence Pugh.
There you go.
Ka-dum-ching.
Very good.
You keep those jokes coming and I won't be as mad as you.
Where does he like to sit when he goes to church?
He likes to sit in the narthex.
Yes, of course.
Nerd! Well, I think that this scene is pretty trippy because, like, where does Billy Connolly look at a blind Muppet?
What do you mean? He's looking at him?
Yeah, he is looking at him, but that's got to be hard. Like, the whole thing about Muppets is how realistic they look. And how they have a directional gaze.
But yeah, no, you're right. Because also,
he has two eye patches.
Yeah.
And also, we're seeing Billy Connolly like full on the front of his face, right? So he's not looking, it's not his profile and he's looking at Blind Pew. It's kind of, he's facing the camera, but it's just his eyes are pointed over in the direction of Blind Pew as he's looking terrified.
Yeah, it's like he's using his periphery vision.
Yeah, so that's some effective blocking and effective acting on Billy Connolly's part.
Yeah, Billy Connolly is awesome, guys. And how much have you discussed his awesomeness?
Great, we did. Yeah. He's been in this before now. Yeah,
yeah, and I found an excerpt from an interview that I think I mentioned last week or the week before, where he talked about like seeing two puppeteers operating Blind Pew and how he actually was scared of this large puppet running toward him when coming together.
Wow.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's very effective. And I just, Jerry Nelson is such a great casting choice for this character because he is so good at that evil laugh.
Yeah. Although I'll say this, when he runs, are we talking about when he runs out yet or not?
Yeah. So that's the next thing that happens. He makes his way back to the front door. Jim opens the door for him. Pew goes outside and he abruptly stops the maniacal laughter and starts walking away with his hands held out to feel in front of him. And then there's this crash and we hear a cat squealing, which is not my favorite joke. It's just one of these kind of lazy overdone jokes. Although I'm sure there are lazy overdone jokes that I always laugh at, but not a big fan of the cat squeal.
We just talked about already about how like how he doesn't, we talked last week, I guess, or 2 weeks ago, maybe even, about how if he's like a menacing blind guy, he should not also be incompetent and unable to move around. Like, it's not that funny.
Yeah.
He's like knocking into things all the time.
I would argue that there are many menacing men out there who are completely incompetent.
Right, but I mean, like,
well, that's true.
He got to the Admiral Benbow Inn.
Yes.
And like without trouble. And then he like has to like feel around and is bad at it and thinks the moose is Billy Bones. And
yeah.
You know, that's a funny thing.
I did not put this in my notes, but there's something that Brian Henson says in the DVD commentary about, he uses the phrase, it's all an act, which I didn't really understand, which is why I didn't put it in my notes. But he's saying, I guess that Pew is not quite as incompetent as he makes it seem, like he wants people to think that he's more incompetent than he is. But I don't know. It really seems like he's genuinely stumbling around. And
right.
Yeah, but then he like this is before my minutes, but then he zeroes in on the sound of gun. So
yeah, that's cool.
Seriously think that it's, you know, character-wise, it's to throw people off.
Yeah, you're just like Brian Henson.
And to rebalance it, you know, just so that just so that he is intimidating. It's just like, oh, this guy, complete hack, and now he's threatening my life. Okay. Yeah.
And I do think as a character in this story, he is, I do think they succeeded at making him both silly and scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right.
But this is the last that we see of him.
No, he's going to.
No, he comes back with Black Dog and all those guys.
Yeah.
Well, the Mud Bunny and all them.
Oh, yeah. But he's not a huge thing.
But he's just there. He's a part of that.
Yeah.
He's not on the Hispaniola. He just comes back all the time.
I think that it would have been better if he had gotten more lines later.
Yeah. Make him more like a real pirate.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Like, he was never one of my favorites in this movie.
I know.
But I do think that he would have been even better if he hadn't just had this one scene.
Yeah.
But
I think the problem is if he were to show up on the ship, then the good guys would immediately know. This is a pirate. We shouldn't get on the ship. We shouldn't go on this voyage.
Yeah. Well, he's not on the ship, but he is there later. But he doesn't say anything.
He's only there when they come back to the inn.
Yeah.
He's not on the, he's not a pirate. He's not with Long John Silver later at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I don't know. I just want him involved with Long John. I think that it would make more sense to me.
You just want him to like make a cameo on the island or something.
Yeah. Just like have him appear there or something.
Sure.
Because it just doesn't seem like he was really, I don't know. He was just such a precursor. Maybe I just don't like him. Yeah, not sure. But
it sounds like you have conflicted feelings about him.
I have very conflicted feelings about his name, about his presence, about everything. I just want a little bit more so that I actually do like the character and it has more long-term effect, I guess.
That's interesting.
Since he doesn't, I don't like him, and I'm changing his name to Blind Pew.
I don't think we've had anybody say about a character that they don't like the character, so they wish they could see a little bit more of him. I'm
a complicated person.
I know. I think that's cool. Fine. I think that's like, you want to be able to give the character another chance. So
yes,
yeah, I like that. Yeah. I admire that.
Well, I think when he walks out the door here. And Jerry Nelson is doing that whole like, for quite a while.
Yes.
And then he hits a cat and says, "Get out of my way, you stupid cat." That's what he does like the whole way out the door. That feels like a real, like they think he's a fan favorite. Like they are expecting the audience to be laughing the whole time, you know?
Yes.
Like it's just like a hold for laughter. Our Blind Pew's walking out and.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
I kind of remember people laughing in the theater. I don't know. It's been a long time. But yeah.
I do like Blind Pierre twirling Billy Connolly's hair with his finger.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a nice little, like, overly affectionate, like, unwelcome touch type thing that's very threatening. And I think that that's a good little scary touch.
Yeah, and just to give him a piece of business to do while he's threatening him.
Yeah, but nothing that like hopefully kids would not pick up on. But like as an adult, I'm just like, ooh, that's creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get your hands off my hair. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
Off of Billy Connolly's gorgeous little locks.
Is that his real hair? It might be.
His white hair now is magnificent.
Yeah, he has long hair now.
He's always had long hair, I guess. Yeah, so it's probably is his real hair.
It is definitely curly, and it is, like lifetime goals to have my hair look like Billy Connolly's
hair. In a lot of period pieces, I assume that, like, Jennifer Saunders is definitely wearing a wig in this, but...
I'm looking at a DVD cover of Billy Connolly's World Tour of Australia, filmed in 1995,
uh-huh.
And his hair looks almost just like Billy Bones' hair.
Oh, you guys are going to look this up. He All looks right. amazing.
So that's probably his real hair. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The next shot starts from the doorway, and then brings us around the room to the other side of the room where Billy Bones is standing. It passes the stuffed moose head on the wall, who is still alive. The moose head is looking over at Billy Bones, which is a nice touch.
Yep.
Bones is staring at this piece of paper. His hand is shaking uncontrollably because what is on the paper? It is a black circle. Why is that such a big deal? Well, he black tells us.
Black.
Yes, it's the black spot. And then he screams. And then there's a cut to the outside of the inn where his scream is just reverberating and a bird flies away. And there's this dramatic musical sting.
I love how long they hang on his face for this scream. That is great. I'm glad that they didn't just jump to the outside so that it all felt recorded. I'm glad that they recorded his face screaming that much. That gives me so much more joy.
Yeah, that, you see that, like, he was committed to the scream.
Yeah, I literally wrote that down. Full commitment.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know if I've already said this, but I've been thinking it as we go through this movie. I think I like Muppet Treasure Island as an adventure movie starring the Muppets, perhaps more than as a Muppet movie. And I think I like it a lot that way, if that makes sense.
I'm with you.
And this is part of that, where it's the period, it's the piratey stuff. Like, I've only seen one Pirates of the Caribbean movies. I like the ride at the Disney parks, but like, I'm not really into pirate stuff, but you take a story like this and add the Muppets to it and I'm on board. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you're going to go see an adventure, but you also want to do it with your favorite characters.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You still do that.
So
Space Jam.
As I've said
that
before.
Is not Space. Okay. No, actually, yes. I fully agree with you. Except I don't really care about sports movies, but you put Looney Tunes in it. Yeah, sure. I'll watch basketball.
You said Space Jam?
Yeah, I said Space Jam.
Oh, yeah, well. Yeah. Okay. It doesn't always work.
No, I was there for Space Jam whenever it first came out.
Yeah, you got to remember, we're 4 years younger than Ryan. So we were 11 and he was 15.
That's a big difference. I think
that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, those are significant ages to accept Michael Jordan's acting talent.
I did not go crazy for Space Jam when it came out. However, I did own some of those t-shirts with the Looney Tunes characters as gangsters. So, gangsters?
Yeah. Gangsta Tweety.
So that's pretty embarrassing, but...
Aww. You just own it, Ryan.
What?
You just own it. We won't tell anybody that you're in that shirt right now.
Everybody was wearing those shirts back then. So.
Yeah.
So this is like it's the setting, it's the scene, it's the I don't know the world building with this black spot thing. Speaking of which, I was wondering, did the concept of the black spot exist in real life before?
You want me to open the strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
Oh yeah, sure. I have some stuff about it. But yeah, you go ahead and open the strange case.
So tell me if you found the same, because what it says in the annotated Treasure Island, which I actually used for this one, is that Stevenson invented the term the black spot.
Right.
That's what originates in the book.
Yes.
But in real pirates, some real pirates in the Caribbean, an Ace of Spades card was used, presented to a condemned traitor.
Ooh.
So like, that's probably where he got the idea. That's what you found as well?
Yeah, there's actually an entire Wikipedia article about the black spot. It said that's probably the origin of it or what inspired Stevenson to put it in this book. But then it goes on to mention several, like, way more books and movies and TV shows and video games than I would have expected that have referenced the black spot or sort of incorporated it or riffed on it.
Well, it's such a striking idea.
Yeah.
You know, that like, this is how you tell someone they're going to be killed, is that you, like, give them a piece of paper with a black spot
and variations of it, like a Doctor Who, which I don't remember, a Matt Smith era Doctor Who episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was the black spot appeared on their hands.
Isn't it just the pirate one?
Yeah, it's the pirate one.
The one where Paddington's dad plays a pirate captain?
Yeah.
Lord Grantham?
Where Lord Grantham is a pirate captain.
Yeah.
I just didn't remember the black spot part of it. And then...
it's called Curse of the Black Spot. That's the title of the episode. It's
been too long since I watched it, obviously.
But this time it shows up on your hand because you get hurt. And so it's like, oh, you've got a tiny little cut. And so now you have a black spot on your hand. So you're going to die.
Okay.
Yeah.
At least that's what you think. You guys want to talk about Doctor Who now?
Always.
Okay. Let's do that after this.
I have to rewatch that episode first, clearly. And then yes! Another reference, which I had forgotten. Apparently, it's in an episode of 30 Rock where Jack Donaghy gives Liz Lemon's boyfriend a black spot to show his disapproval. So
yeah, that's okay.
Did not remember that.
And I do love it because it's like, it's a threatening thing, but absolutely nothing that could be held up in the Queen's court or anything like that. Like,
oh,
what's
yeah.
a spot on the page?
Yeah.
It can't be held up, but really it's like, there's a hit out on you and I took it out of you.
But it's not like writing a letter and saying, I'm going to kill you because it's just, you could just say, oh, I was just testing my pen. I just made a big blob of ink on this piece of paper. I was just seeing if this pen worked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we cut to Billy Bones' room at the inn where he's scrambling to toss his things into a trunk. Jim Hawkins says, I don't understand. What's the black spot? And Billy Bones says, the black spot's a pirate's death sentence. They'll be coming to kill me. In between those two lines, Rizzo gasps and Gonzo says, fabulous. So, possibly an ad lib, but once again, we have Gonzo, the guy who just wants to be doing dangerous things and loves hearing about dangerous things.
Yes. He wants to go meet the Zanza Barbarians.
Yeah.
We talked about those.
Yeah. And now he gets to watch a pirate die, which is absolutely the same level of adventure. Seeing death,
watching and traveling,
and meeting other cultures, like that's all equal.
How long do you need to plummet before you see a pirate die?
Yeah. I mean, either way, it should be a good time for him. Those two, Gonzo and Rizzo, start to help Billy pack. Billy says, "This is his old sea chest that those lubbers are after." Then he says, "And I double checked the Disney Plus." subtitles for this. He says, I'll trick him. I'll shake out another reef and daddle him again. To which Rizzo replies, you want to run that by us again in English there, Mr. Bones? Which, yes, okay, that's a kind of another lazy trope, but it really doesn't sound like English. But he doesn't translate. So I looked it up. According to Merriam-Webster, daddle is a British dialectical variant of dawdle. So presumably he means he's just going to go off somewhere far away and delay the bad guys from finding him, I guess. I don't know. Any other theories?
That makes sense. Yeah.
Because he's already run from them once to get the map originally. Yeah. So that's what he's saying.
Or to keep it away from them.
Yeah. Because he's made it this far to Miss Blubberidge's inn and to have a whole lot of rum. And now he's just going to do it again. So that's what he's saying.
Yeah, and shake out another reef, I guess, just means like go to somewhere else, like across the ocean or...
Yeah.
Yeah. I imagine that he's like referencing, you know, just like fish. It's just like, I'm going to go find a new place.
Yeah.
To live, right?
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, that could be. Yeah. Fish swim around to different places.
I never thought that was daddle. I always thought that he said battle.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's saying something.
It's kind of the opposite, though. Yeah, he's running away. He doesn't want to battle them.
I thought that he was like gearing up to like fight them again, and instead he's running away to go chill out somewhere else.
Getting out of there, yeah.
Oh,
actually, come to think of it, I guess it kind of is reminiscent of the word skedaddle, which is also what he's doing.
Daddle. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So, Billy Bone saying, I'll shake it another reef and skedaddle out of here.
Yeah.
That doesn't have as much ring. I'm glad that they kept it the way that they did.
Dabble him again. Yeah.
And skedaddle out of here.
Then he says he's going to find the treasure himself. And now, so he's getting really worked up here. He's, you know, running back and forth, putting stuff in his trunk. He's getting all riled up. He says, and no one-legged son of a bilge rat will. And then he gasps and chokes and collapses on his bed.
That is such good fake swearing, I think. Well, there's a one-legged son of a bilge rat. There's a line in Aladdin, Disney's Aladdin, just a few years before this, where Jafar traps him in the cave, and Aladdin says, I'll get that two-faced son of a jackal, whoever was.
Yeah.
And that's what this reminds me of. Like, it's such a, like, it, you can imagine that he's what he would say if he was going to swear. Right, especially bilge starts with the same two letters as the traditional ending of son of a. Yeah. But then it's son of a bilge rat, which is just fun, and I love it.
And it also sounds like pirate talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could be son of, like, people say it's a son of a biscuit. It's that same kind of thing.
Yeah. It's already in Toy Story when Mr. Potato Head says, son of a building block. It's Woody.
Yeah.
Oh, and classic Bluey now saying biscuits instead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
True.
They say that on Bluey?
Just biscuits.
Just biscuits.
Oh, okay. All just as biscuits. Kind of a, like, nuts.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It totally works. And it feels more effective than saying on nuts.
Yeah.
And you can say it full of room, full of first graders, and they know exactly.
They do. They know it.
They're totally cool with that. So.
Yeah, yeah. Or it's like when the 7 foot tall carrot on the Muppet Show says, "Oh, potatoes!" When they mess up the song. There was something earlier in the movie, in this very movie, where I was commenting on one of Billy Bones' lines being like fake swearing, but I've already forgotten what it was. But. It's good stuff.
Dude is good at fake swears.
Yeah. So Jim and Rizzo and Gonzo rush over and stare at Bones for a moment. Rizzo says, he died? And this is supposed to be a kid's movie.
Is it though?
Yeah.
Is it Rizzo? Is it supposed to be?
Well, that's the thing. I think this is a pretty good.
I think it's a family movie. I think Rizzo is wrong that it's supposed to be a kid's movie.
Yeah, and I think that's why he says the line, because there at this point in the movie, there were probably some parents who went into this with their kids thinking that it was a kid's movie. It's rated G, it's the Muppets, it's a Walt Disney picture. And after all this talk of murder and some on-screen gunplay and drunkenness, these parents are probably thinking, like, oh, I thought this was supposed to be a kid's movie. Why did I bring my kids to this? So Rizzo is asking the question that's on those parents' minds. So I think this is a pretty good example of this type of self-aware joke.
I like the cut of your jib, Ryan Rowe. Yeah.
Thank you. I do not always like this kind of joke. Like, when Deadpool does this 1,000 times in one movie, I get tired of it. But this one I like.
Well, and also it isn't overused yet, and like having a character give the audience their perspective is tried and true and effective as long as it's not overused.
Yes.
And Rizzo's the perfect dude to do it because that's his entire purpose in this movie.
Well, yeah, and he's of these three characters, he's the cowardly one, so he's the one who's shocked by this.
Yeah, yeah, all right, fair enough.
Yeah, we defeated Anthony.
We're doing it. And then we trip over a cat. Yeah, so Billy Bones is dead. But wait, no, he's not. He's not quite dead yet. He reaches out and grabs Gonzo's nose for the second time in this motion picture.
And he says...
Yes, tell us, Roz, tell us what Billy Bones says.
Jimmy Jim 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 Jimmy Jim 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 Jim. I don't even know if that's the right number. It's a number.
It wasn't quite right.
Don't care. It's so much fun. Jim Jim Jimmy Jim 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 Jim. Is that it? Is that it?
Do you want me to tell you?
How many more times?
You want me to tell you?
Yeah, okay.
Jimmy Jim Jimmy Jim 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 Jim.
Jimmy Jim 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 Jim.
Jimmy Jim. Jimmy Jim, Jim Jim Jim.
Jim Jim. I love this joke. I think that...
I do too. I know I do.
I use it in regular life.
You do. Well, your dad's name is Jim.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that
Holler out.
You're just like Brian Henson.
Yeah, holler. Oh, my gosh. Holler out to my dad, who will never hear this in his entire life, because it is not an Allman Brothers, Allman Brothers album. He's never going to listen to this, so that's fine.
And if he did, he would actually, if he did, though, he would say, pretty cool, Razzie.
I'm sure there's an Allman Brothers podcast out there he can listen to if he doesn't already.
I'm sure. Well, he's also deaf, so that probably doesn't help.
He's literally deaf in one ear.
Really going,
yeah.
But
well, okay. So then, though, Roz, tell us what Gonzo says in reply.
I'm not Jimmy Jim 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 Jimmy Jim 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 Jim. He's Jimmy Jim 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 Jim.
Yeah, that's it, more or less.
Yes, he does it three times, all while having his nose held, which is very impressive. I think that that's great.
Yes.
Isn't he keeps telling me to quit being as loud because I'm going to break the equipment?
No, I'm worried about waking the kids up.
Oh, yeah, we have children asleep.
Yeah. Oh. We can cut that out, but that's why I keep doing it.
Yep, totally forgot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is probably one of the most quoted jokes from this movie, right? I think when...
Yeah, and that's it. Well, and speaking of our two babies, we have a video of Miles going, I'm not Jimmy Jim 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 Jim. He's Jimmy Jim 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 Jim.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Miles can get the count right. I just can't.
You got the spirit of it. Yeah. But yeah, as we record this, what was it? The 28th anniversary of this movie was just last week. And there were a lot of posts on social media about it. And I saw this line, people quoting this line in comments a lot. So people love this. And yeah, and it's really funny.
You got it, folks. I got this joke.
Yes, yes.
And I had to go through Blind Pierre to get it.
This was the one.
This was the one. This is the joke that people quote, this is the one that they know. And that's because it's so simple.
Yes.
And it does Jim Henson's three times rule.
That's true.
And it just lands it. It's perfect.
It's really funny.
It's really, really funny.
I agree.
Yes. So the problem is that I don't get the following minutes after that. I thought that this would be the first minute. And then I get the next few minutes. Whoever gets the next few minutes gets some high quality jokes. I don't care what Anthony says. Great jokes coming up after Jimmy Jim Jim Jimmy Jim 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 Jim. And it's going to be great. You guys are going to have a blast. Think of me as you record the next few minutes.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to just like, do you have a few brief thoughts on the next 2 minutes? Because you're not going to be here with us.
So whenever they're packing his trunk, that's the next jokes.
Yeah.
Right. And he already got to, like, Gonzo already got to say, underwear. That's, you know,
we kind of glossed over that, but yes, that's in here.
Yeah. That's going to make any little kid laugh because they're not really going to get, they're not going to get Billy Bones and his British swarthy piratey terms that they didn't understand until they were in their 30s tonight.
Didn't
get that until now. So they certainly didn't, but they heard the word underwear. And that is the number one way to make kids laugh.
Yeah.
Is to mention underwear. So I'm really glad that they just tossed that in there. Don't pay it much attention, but every tiny child is going, he said underwear.
And you had another thought about that you said last night that I thought was good.
Sure. Tell me what my thought was. It was a while.
It's in your notes.
Oh, yeah. So I love the next jokes that come up with packing his trunk because Gonzo and Rizzo become riff tracks for this movie. So they're just in between the spaces of actual plot line. They're just throwing in whatever funny ideas that they had. And it almost seems like they just had random stuff that they wanted to throw in. And this is where they got to do it. So they just got to make fun of piratey stuff, packing Billy Bones' trunk while he dies.
Yeah, pretty much. That's cute. That your remark about underwear just reminded me of a book that I have not thought about in so long. I think it was third or maybe fourth grade. My teacher read a book to us. I don't know what it was called. It might have just been called Underwear. I want to say it was about a zebra and a giraffe who were friends, and one of them was trying to convince the other one that underwear was the funniest word that you could say. And the kind of grumpy one was like, no, I'm not going to say underwear. It's not a funny word. And then by the end of the book, they were just saying underwear and cracking up. And
The title of the book is, in fact, Underwear.
Great.
It was written by Mary Elise Moncel. Pictures by Lynn Munsinger.
And is it a zebra and a giraffe?
It is a zebra and an orangutan and a pelican on the cover. Does that sound right?
Maybe the orangutan was the one, was the other one that didn't want to laugh. I don't know. I guess I should look for that book, though. Because when you're like 8 or 9, that is like the height of comedy.
It is. It is. There's been a bunch of books just about underwear.
Well, Captain Underpants, of course.
Captain Underpants is dominating. There's a book called, there's a line of Mr. Panda books. And the one in Thank You, Mr. Panda. Mr. Panda is bad at giving presents. And so he keeps giving presents that aren't very good. And people get upset with Mr. Panda for bad presents. And then he has this little lemur that keeps saying, it's the thought that counts. At least that's the voice that I do for him. And then the very last page, the lemur gets giant donut covered underwear. Oh. And
like, to be clear, donut print, not
donut.
Doesn't have okay. Donut print.
Donut print underwear. And kids just lose it.
Oh, yeah.
Underwear.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great stuff.
And they all think that they invented the joke. Hey, Miss Strand, look under there. And then you say, what, under the table? And they go, no, no, no. And then they keep trying. And it's a really good way to waste time.
Oh, so you refuse to play along. You refuse to be the stooge.
Yes.
Yes. Team.
As immortalized in the song Pinch Me by Bare Naked Ladies. I can hide out under there. I just made you say underwear.
Yes. Yeah. I try to tell them, you know, I've been teaching for a while, but they don't ever believe me. They're just like, I'm going to get her.
You've heard it all. Yeah.
Hey, guys, come listen to a podcast. You'll hear me say underwear. Yeah.
You should tell your students that.
We haven't quite gotten to the end of this, these 2 minutes, because then Billy Bone says, Jim. Jim says, yes, Captain. Billy Bone says, Jim. And that's where these 2 minutes.
Well, right. So this is not Billy Connolly's last appearance.
It is.
Oh, it's not. No, he keeps talking for a little while. But yeah, we'll just have to come back next week to find out what he's going to say. Is he going to say Jim?
He's going to say Jim Barnhart. I got you an Allman Brothers album.
That's what he's going to say. Yeah. It's got to be
Jim Barnhart. Jim Barnhart. I found your golf ball in a sand trap.
Yes, that's what he's saying.
That is
say.
Definitely it. It could not possibly be anything else. So I have one thing from the June 1st, 1994 draft of the screenplay. Our favorite line in this scene is actually different, if you can believe it.
Ooh.
In this draft, Billy Bones grabs Rizzo and addresses him as Jim. And then Rizzo says, I'm not Jim. I'm the rat. He's the Jim. So I would be curious. It's not as good, though. I'd be curious to know when it turned into this version with the Jimmy Jim, because it is an improvement.
It is. They did well with that, because I'm the rat, he's the Jim. I don't know.
Well,
it's good.
And I think it was a good decision to switch it to Gonzo when they switched, because it would not be as funny if Rizzo said it. I don't know why, but it just wouldn't.
Because Rizzo,
such a Gonzo joke.
Rizzo would be genuinely afraid of being held by the neck by a dying pirate.
That's right. True. You're right. Whereas Gonzo's just like, hey.
He's just like, I'm not Jimmy.
Not me.
Jim. He's Jimmy, Jim. And then Billy Connolly goes, Jim, go make some baby back ribs. I don't know. I'm running out of aspects to my dad.
It's all your dad.
We've covered them all.
Music, all the family friendly ones. All right. All right, what else?
I have a few things from the, I'll call it the listener comment treasure chest this season. I think we were just calling it the listener comment bag in previous seasons. But before we get to that.
We could have called it the counting comment house.
Last season.
The comment counting house.
I should have, but didn't I just call it the comment bag?
We did just call it the comment bag.
Yeah, why didn't you say that last year?
I don't know. And in Manhattan, we should have called it comments popping in your face in 3D.
That's what we should have called it.
And on Keeper, we should have said, what comment are their hands now?
Oh.
And on the Muppet movie, we should have said, a bear and a frog in a rainbow comment, Studebaker.
Wow. Well, do you want to decide the one now for Muppets from Space? That's
right now.
Muppets from Space is going to be, the remote. I thought you said the comments.
We can think about that one.
I'm a little less proud of you now.
What? Why? Oh, it's going to be Hulk Hogan looking into the camera and saying, this is for all my NWOites out there. I will continue to answer your listener comments.
That's it. Well, before we get to those, though.
Stupid. I
know. Hulk Hogan's cameo in that movie is.
Oh, it really is. Yeah, we'll get to that next year. Anything?
I'm so excited.
Oh, boy. Anything else on these 2 minutes, Roz, starting with you?
I think that Billy Connolly dying is perfect.
Yeah?
I do. Because I think that he's so physically active in this scene.
Yeah.
And I think really, really hard to do. He doesn't have a big space. It's mostly close-ups. And he, like, manages to run in this tiny, tiny space.
Yeah.
He manages to do, like, a full-body trust fall out of nowhere. And the fact that he is so physical in falling back and dying.
Yeah, does he just fall out of the frame when he collapses before he lands on the bed? Yeah, wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, but you don't really think of it as him falling out of the, because he's just like, he's using his entire body, even though he's in a Muppet movie where you don't, you know, not everybody gets to do that as much.
Humans.
Whenever you're a human character.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he really took advantage of it. And yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Yeah.
For those reasons.
Anthony, anything else on these 2 minutes?
Well, I have a couple of other things from The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Okay.
I told you that, didn't I?
No.
That's what I'm calling it, like the old Curiosity Shop, because that was the title of a different Dickens novel.
Oh, okay. So what's different?
Robert Louis Stevenson novel.
Stevenson novel.
Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Oh.
I could have been kidnapped.
Yeah.
Could have been a child's garden of verses, but I went with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde because I thought it was funniest.
It is pretty funny.
And now we've established it, so we can't change it.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. Yep. All right. But so this scene does have a lot in the book. I mentioned last week that Blind Pew does show up.
Yeah, I figured this scene would.
Right. And in this one, Blind Pew does deliver the black spot to Billy Bones. And on one side, it has the black spot. And on the other side, it actually says, you have until 10 tonight.
Whoa. And what time is it when he gives it to him?
It is 4 o'clock.
Oh.
And actually, in this scene, Billy Bones says, you've always been a decent sort to old Billy Bones. And that line is not in the book, but the sentiment kind of is. And actually, I want to do a little reading from the book because I actually really love this passage.
Story time.
Yeah. So, 10 o'clock, he cried, he being Billy Bones, or the captain. The captain is Billy Bones, he'll be referred to later.
Okay.
10 o'clock, he cried, 6 hours. We'll do them yet. And he sprang to his feet. Even as he did so, he reeled, put his hand to his throat, stood swaying for a moment, and then, with a peculiar sound, fell from his whole height, face foremost, to the floor. To the floor. I ran to him at once, calling to my mother. But haste was all in vain. The captain had been struck dead by thundering apoplexy. It was a curious thing, which means a stroke, I found out.
Yeah.
Basically, he just had a stroke from drinking too much rum and worrying about being captured by pirates.
Yeah.
That'll do you.
Yeah. It is a curious thing to understand, for I had certainly never liked the man, though of late I had begun to pity him. But as soon as I saw that he was dead, I burst into a flood of tears.
Hmm.
It was the second death I had known, and the sorrow of the first was still fresh in my heart, which was that his father had just passed away.
Yeah.
So it's like a really lovely little moment where he's like, all this guy did was yell at me to bring him rum. But like when he died, I realized that I pitied him.
Well, yeah, he's still a person and it's a sad death. So,
yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So it's tonally very different from this scene. But
yes,
Billy Bones does die in the book.
I'm glad that Billy Bones didn't use the actual text from the book as a reference. That would have been a real downer.
It would. Well, but like that's what we've talked about is like the book, even more so than A Christmas Carol, the book really isn't a great fit for the Muppets.
No.
And like that's why they have to keep changing, you know, much more. That's why they have to stray farther from
it. Yeah. Yeah.
Loose adaptation. I'm sure we'll keep saying that over and over again.
Yeah.
Loose adaptation.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to say it like that now?
What?
I don't know what that was.
Well, yeah, what was that?
I don't know. I'm getting tired. It's fine. Loose adaptation. Loose adaptation.
Okay. That's all I have.
Okay, listener comment treasure chest. In a recent episode, we speculated about the origins of the phrase dead men tell no tales. Longtime listener Dyad came through. He said, I went down a bit of a research rabbit hole with Dead Men Tell No Tales, and it is apparently really old in various forms, originally translated from Latin and Persian. But the exact formation first appears in John Dryden's play The Spanish Friar from 1681, although even that claims to be quoting a proverb. The connection to pirates might be as recent as the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, but I get the impression nobody's entirely sure. So, yeah, whether, you know, however long it's been associated with pirates, it is a very old turn of phrase. So that's cool to know. I also wanted to mention a few episodes ago, our guest Megan talked about seeing the Muppet music video for Kokomo as a kid and thinking or being under the impression that it might have something to do with Muppet Treasure Island. She could not remember where she saw it. Over on the Tough Pigs Discord, a few people have thrown out some theories. Maybe she saw it on Nickelodeon, which aired it a lot. That seemed like a good theory. It was on some other non-Muppet Disney videotape releases. But Megan told us that she did not have cable or own any of those other tapes. So this is an ongoing mystery. If anyone else out there has any theories, where might a young person in the 90s, mid-90s, have encountered the Kokomo video? Please.
She saw it in her heart, guys.
It
was there in her heart.
She loved the Muppets so much that she just knew the Kokomo video. It was just there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Also, Megan was born in the mid-90s, so she was watching it in the 2000s. I don't think we want to prematurely age our guests.
No, okay. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, you're right. So that makes it even weirder, though, then, doesn't it? Because that's when Nickelodeon was running it.
Well, when did Kokomo come out?
93, right? It's on Muppet Beach Party.
Yes.
The video that same year? 93. Yeah.
And when did the song, Kokomo?
88. Yeah.
That was the first song that I ever memorized.
Right. I knew that. You told me that. Yeah.
Like, I was 4.
Yeah.
And I was able to sing this whole song because I remember.
For some reason, kids liked that song, which is weird.
It all sounds like silly words when you're a little kid.
That's true. It's fun to memorize.
It's very bouncy, you know?
Kokomo, Kookamonga, it's all fun caves.
None of us were going to see the movie Cocktail that song came from the soundtrack of. But
I remember Kokomo playing very, very specifically in a very early memory of mine where I am playing in a babysitter's driveway and it was playing on the radio.
Yeah.
And as soon as it went off, then we just turned the radio off and just all started singing it.
Oh, okay.
All of us were there.
Is that right?
That's fun.
Yeah.
Also, we talked about the stein on the table in the bar that was designed to look like the producer, Martin G. Baker. Our friend Eric noted that that style of drinking vessel is called a Toby jug. So I looked into this a little bit more. According to the American Toby Jug Museum, a Toby jug, yeah, a Toby jug is a figural ceramic pitcher modeled in the form of a popular character, historical, fictional, or generic. It can be a person or animal. The original Tobys date back to the 1760s. And why is it called a Toby jug? The museum says there are competing theories. Most likely it was named after a notorious 18th century Yorkshire drinker, Henry Elwes, who was known as Toby Philpot and was inspired by an old English drinking song, The Brown Jug. So if you want to know more about Toby jugs, the Toby Jug Museum is in Evanston, Illinois. I think it says they have something like 8,000 of those things. You can take a tour by appointment only if you're going to be, I believe Evanston is near Chicago. So
by appointment only.
Yeah. It's probably just like one guy. It's probably one guy's collection.
You guys going to make sure that he's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a couple who've been to the largest twine ball in Minnesota, like we've been to this.
That did happen to us at the twine ball.
Where if you want to get into the museum, you call this dude's cell phone.
Oh,
yeah. There was a note on the door that said, like, if you want to go in, call the guy.
Yeah. So
I called him. He was like, well, we got a Legion baseball game coming up that I'm running concessions at, but I can get you in for about 10 minutes if you're going to buy merchandise.
You got to buy something.
Yeah. So, and that's why I have a t-shirt that has the twine ball on it.
Yeah, and that's fly swatter.
We got a fly swatter. We got a mug.
We got a baby onesie.
We did.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, we really need to go to this
Toby Jug
in Evanston. Yeah, because that's right up our alley.
It is.
Maybe we should all just meet up in the Chicago area and go to the Toby Jug
Museum. That would be a blast.
Meet up for the Toby Jug Museum.
I do love stuff like that, though. I know we're getting to the end of the episode here, but in Connecticut, I went to this place called the Witch's Dungeon Classic Movie Museum, which is owned and operated by like one or two guys. They're classic movie fans, and they've just commissioned or I think made themselves these wax figures of all these old horror movie monsters.
What?
And you got to just like call or email this guy to make an appointment, and he'll guide you through the whole thing. And it was so much fun. Yeah. The Witch's Dungeon Classic Movie Museum in Plainville, Connecticut. I recommend it.
I'm looking at their website right now. They got Dracula.
Yep.
They got a bunch of different Lon Chaneys.
Yeah, they have the Abominable Dr. Fibes, which I've never even seen that movie.
The Vincent Price movie.
Yeah.
So they got Werewolf of London, the pre-Wolfman Universal werewolf movie, which I consider to be superior because I'm a dork.
Oh, hot take.
You know, this actually reminds me of that art exhibit that we saw at the Minnesota Institute of Art.
Guillermo
del Toro's.
Yeah, his added wax figures of a bunch of.
Yeah, things. Yeah. Actually looks kind of similar.
Yeah.
Except that this one probably wouldn't actually scare the living crap out of me.
And that was just the Pale Man.
Oh,
went to the Guillermo del Toro touring exhibit, the life size sculpture of the Pale Man from Pan's Labyrinth, Roz could not take.
That's understandable. I ran away like a 5'1" little preschool teaching girl because that's what I am.
If listeners have not seen Pan's Labyrinth, do a Google image search of the Pale Man Pan's Labyrinth.
Or don't.
Yeah, or don't.
You don't have to. Scary. Just imagine what scary looks like.
It's just.
No,
it's just Doug Jones. He's just Doug Jones in there.
Okay, it's not Doug Jones and falling in love with a girl in water, or Doug Jones hanging out with Hellboy and Kraken Wise. This is creep factor times 10. Yeah. Don't look up Pale Man. Don't do it, guys.
It's up to you.
Just say whatever they're talking about, I don't need that mental image in my little Rolodex to review whenever I have no serotonin until 2 a.m. this morning. Okay? Don't do it. Don't do it.
I can't believe you said Shape of Water and Hellboy, but not Hocus Pocus, your favorite Doug
Jones. Oh, yeah. Movie. Yeah.
Well, anyway, thanks
it's
to...
It's not a happy zombie either.
There you go.
From Hocus Pocus. So... Don't.
All right, anyways, we're
anyway,
done.
Thanks to Eric.
Years ago.
Yes, thanks to Eric for telling us what a Toby jug is. And I just want to say, there's that Muppet Wiki article called Martin Baker Stein. Maybe that should be changed to Martin Baker Toby jug. I don't know. I'm a little, I'm afraid to make that change myself on the wiki, lest it be reverted, but just putting it out there. So.
If it thus be reverted, Ryan, would... thou be punished? Punished?
I don't know. I dare not cross the wiki admins. All right. And Roz, you will be back with us later in the movie. Not next week, but you will join us again.
So, can't keep me away if you try.
Yeah. Listeners have that to look forward to.
I like this movie.
I like you.
I like people like this movie.
I admire your enthusiasm.
Well, with that, we can wrap up for this week. Roz, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. It was fun.
Anytime.
And Billy Connolly is great, and so is this movie. And everybody agrees.
Yeah. I think you wore him down. Thanks to Morgan Davey for our show's logo. Listeners, you can find Tough Pigs on the internet at toughpigs.com and all over social media, as well as TeePublic and Patreon. You can also check out the Tough Pigs Discord server. All kinds of discussions happening there all the time. Join us. There's a whole thread for this podcast over there. Let us know what you think of this movie by writing to us at movingrightalong@toughpigs.com. You can find me on Letterboxd at @moviesareneat. Anthony is on Letterboxd at Zeppo Marxist. I've gotten a few new followers since this new podcast season started, so I think it works that we shout out our handles here. So,
are you?
Yeah,
I'm proud of you.
Please keep following us. Roz, you normally tell us that you are not anywhere on the internet. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I try not to be. But again, if any of you want to get me a message, Anth can get it to me and he can deliver messages. And if any of you want to befriend us in real life in a very legal and comfortable way, I will invite you in and bake you some baked goods and crochet while we talk. It's going to be great.
That does sound great. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And listeners, also, please tell everyone you know to listen to the show. Next time you give them the black spot, make sure you write on the back of it, listen to Moving Right Along, a Muppet Movie Podcast. And join us again next week for another episode of Moving Right Along. Goodbye.
Jim Dad.